Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum. Celebrate the opening of I Saw It, Francisco de Goya Printmaker, with an evening of live music, art making, live model drawing, tours, and more. Saturday, April 20th from 4 to 6:30 p.m. Info at nortonsimon.org.
I'm Julia Paskin. Join me as I talk with NPR's Sarah McCammon about her new book, The Ex-Evangelicals, Loving, Living, and Leaving the White Evangelical Church. That's April 25th at the Crawford. Tickets at las.com/events.
From the Moen Broadcast Center, this is Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Sharon McNary filling in for Larry today as he takes a well-deserved vacation. But later this hour, summer jobs are coming back as retail and hospitality industries are ballooning once again. But the job openings are not happening across the board. Internships in white-collar professions are harder to find than ever. We'll hear your experiences. But first, joining us for our daily update on COVID-19 is Dr. Peter Chin Hong. He's an infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at the UCSF Medical Center. Doctor, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Sharon.
Very happy to have you back. Welcome. Today marks the big reopening in California with many restrictions lifting for the first time in 15 months. I actually saw a woman outside a fast food place in Pasadena busily tearing the 6-foot distancing markers up off the sidewalk. So we're seeing signs of reopening everywhere. So how are you feeling?
I'm feeling cautiously optimistic. Actually, let me cross that off. I'm feeling very optimistic, actually. I think this is long overdue. We've been in such a mire in the last, 15 months or so, and I think we're ready to move on cautiously.
Well, what do you see as the most significant changes Californians are likely to see with this reopening? What should we vaccinated people expect around masks, unvaccinated people? Just a quick review on that piece of it.
I think there are two main features that are going to be looking very different for Californians starting today. The first is really the symbol of the mask. I think some people are still going to be wearing those masks, and we can talk about that. But largely speaking, you'll see large pockets of folks dispense with masks, particularly indoors. And I think the second noticeable thing is just the crowds. You've been used to not seeing crowds anywhere. And we think of that as a good thing largely in terms of feeling somewhat normalized. But again, there's bad stuff for crowds too, like having to wait in line for a really long time or running for that last box of cereal at the grocery, with a few lines of folks in front of you. So I think those would be probably the two most important and striking things, masks and lack of social distancing.
Well, I mean, what about hugs? When I was running this Sunday on the beach, a woman I know, another athlete, comes up to me. She recognizes me, and right away she just gives me a big hug, which, honestly, it's been a long, long time since just an acquaintance gave me a big hug. And then she hurried to tell me that she had not been vaccinated and was trying to avoid the vaccination. And, my head kind of exploded. I know I'm safe since I'm vaccinated, but I wonder if there are people who are going to be taking greater risks now with their own health, now that the responsibility for protection has shifted away from all of us, creating a bubble of protection, and unvaccinated people, have to fend for themselves now.
Yes, definitely. That's something I've been thinking about a lot. There is a lot of FOMO that'll be going around, and the mask becomes a symbol of the fact that you didn't want to get vaccinated if you chose to wear it by guidance. So what it means, and from the spirit of your comment, I think all of us are worried that unvaccinated folks wouldn't want to wear a mask because it says, hey, I'm unvaccinated. It becomes that metaphor, symbol, potentially. So that might be something that's risky if you don't want to be known as someone who isn't really into vaccinations.
Well, I mean, vaccinated people will now be able to go maskless into many bars and gyms and movie theaters. Theoretically, unvaccinated people should be wearing their masks, but they might not. Can we expect businesses to really be checking vaccination status? Are we looking at a big trust system, a big honor system?
It's going to be a big honor system. I think that businesses are not going to be in the business of being a mask police or a vaccine police. And, you know, they have enough potential issues coming up soon with their employees and determining how to, you know, deal with the configuration from Cal OSHA of guidance in the workplace. So, yes, that will be on the honor system. And I think one of the most interesting variations of the theme is for large indoor gatherings over 5,000 people, for the most part, you have to have either been vaccinated or have been tested, but you can self-attest that you've been vaccinated, except in San Francisco, which is requiring that if you are using a self-attestation, that you have to also insist that everyone in a greater than 5,000 indoor venue wear masks as well.
Well, that is a big honor system for sure. And COVID's not gone, right? I mean, 5,000 people, what's the level of risk going maskless if you're unvaccinated and you're self-attesting, but you're not wearing a mask? What's the level of risk going to a mass event like that?
Well, the easiest sort of metric that folks can think about risk is just looking at vaccination levels in each region. So, you know, we tout the fact that we're, you know, 72% of Californians have received at least one dose, 55% fully vaccinated, but there's large variation by region. So if you look at Larsen County, it's 21%. If you look at, you know, some of the more rural areas, Shasta, 36%, even in some parts of Southern California, you know, Kern County, 38%, Riverside, 45%, San Bernardino, 42%. So the level of risk is just based on the community in which you are going to be doing your activity. So that's one way to think about it, even though I think it's a low ball because you have to add in the people who have been protected from natural immunity as well.
Right, and that would include people who'd already got it. If anybody out there has medical questions related to COVID-19, we're taking your calls, 866-893-5722. You can also tweet at AirTalk or leave a comment on the Facebook page. I will be back very quickly with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at the UCSF Medical Center, after this break. From the Moon Broadcast Center, this is Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Sharon McNary, filling in for Larry today. He's off on vacation, having a good time. A little bit later this hour, we'll talk about summer jobs and peacocks and the Buy Nothing movement. But for now, we've got our daily update on COVID-19. We're joined by Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at the UCSF Medical Center. Dr. Chin Hong, when will we have an idea whether a post-reopening surge is happening, whether people are getting sick who are unprotected by masks or distancing?
Well, I think that, you know, it wouldn't be immediately obvious, but I think given the incubation period of COVID, you'd probably expect new exposures to start being reflected in cases as early as 4 days post-reopening, a week for sure. But again, because people are probably not going to get testing as often as they did pre-reopening or early in the pandemic, because testing behavior has really dropped off overall across the board, we probably won't see an uptick necessarily unless people get hospitalized. And that probably will take, you know, 2 weeks or so after reopening to really be manifest. Of course, there are probably going to be a lot more undetected
cases. There may be breakthroughs with vaccines. We know that very, very small risk, but those cases are generally going to be more mild. So people may not even know that they had COVID. Potentially, they may just feel like they had a cold.
Wow. And as usual, if anybody has medical questions related to COVID-19, we are taking your calls, 866-893-5722. You can tweet at AirTalk or leave a comment on our Facebook page. Heather from Sherman Oaks called in with a question. She says, my dad has epilepsy from a brain injury. I want him to get vaxxed, but I wonder if there are side effects for someone like him. What do you think?
That's a great question from Heather. For right now, we don't think that there's any additional side effects in patients with epilepsy. So I would encourage Heather's dad to definitely get vaccinated. Again, the risk, particularly in reopening and more people moving around, is going to be higher for Heather's dad. So I would encourage that.
And I mean, as you know, there's just a ton of, I don't want to say misinformation, but difficult to ascertain information floating around. A woman I know says she doesn't want to get the vaccination because she's 38 years old, wants to have babies, and she thinks that the vaccine might prevent the eggs from sticking to the uterine wall. Is there any research to back that up?
Yes, this was a small hypothesis proposed by someone several months ago from Germany. But since then, there's been several lines of evidence that refute that. There's been, of course, multiple people in the trials. Remember, this is tens of thousands of people in the original trials who've gone on successfully to have, babies. There've been multiple, over millions of people now vaccinated. Just from personal experience, we know that in the health system, there have been individuals coming in now to labor and delivery who've been vaccinated while pregnant and even before pregnancy. So in terms of fertility, they've come in for prenatal care. So nothing seems to be amiss. And then probably the most compelling recent study I've seen was a small study from Singapore looking at the antibodies against the placenta, which was a hypothesis from Germany. And there wasn't any aberration in having antibodies to the placenta that would prevent eggs sticking. So I think with all of these lines of evidence and the fact that people who are pregnant get more severe COVID, we are highly recommended that folks, even those thinking of having babies, get vaccinated.
Wow. I hope that's good news for her. David from the Fairfax District says he's struggling with this question. He says, if we're reopening because most people are vaccinated, but there are people who get vaccinated and still contract COVID and sometimes die, why are we fully reopening?
That's a great question from David. Again, the risk of dying after getting a vaccine, even though it's been reported in the media, it's very, very, very small. And I actually compared the risks just to put things in perspective for listeners. So that risk is the same as dying from a meteor striking you on Earth. So I think it's really, really small. And it just reflects the fact that when you vaccinate millions of people, even though there may be a few cases of this happening, it's really, really small in terms of the risk that we navigate going through life.
Wow. So people tend to overemphasize these extremely rare cases and underemphasize the benefit of widespread vaccinations. Is that just
exactly
human nature?
Yeah, it is human nature for sure, Sharon. I think of it as, prevention is never really sexy, right? You know you've been successful in prevention when people don't get anything, and you can't, when people don't get something, they feel, oh, well, maybe nothing would have happened if I didn't take that prevention strategy. Just like wearing a seatbelt, when you don't get into an accident on the highway, you think, wow, maybe, well, what's the point of wearing the seatbelt? But that's why you need the aggregate of numbers to help us understand that risk.
Anybody has medical questions related to COVID-19 for Dr. Peter Chin Hong, we are taking your calls, 866-893-5722. So according to the state's vaccine breakdown, Black and Latino residents are more likely to not be immunized compared to white and Asian residents. What concerns do you have about equity as these reopenings begin and for potentially fresh outbreaks in communities of color?
I'm worried about that. And when you think about the folks who are not vaccinated yet, they fall into four categories. They include individuals who are sort of on the fence, and that's really where the incentives will work best when you think about the lottery and the, you know, millions of dollars being poured into incentives from the state. But it's not going to target, some communities of color where the reason for not getting vaccinated is not necessarily that they're on the fence. It's just that they're worried about costs. There have been people who've been billed by insurance and it's illegal, but it still has happened either by mistake or I'm not sure why. There are people who are worried about the cost of missing work. They're worried about the potential losing a job if they had a side effect that they might have to stay home the next day for, even though people have really tried to reassure employers that this is something that should be, factored in. And then there's a cost of, not having convenience, even though we're making great inroads and having mobile clinics and door-to-door vaccinations, I still think we need to do enough. Then the third group of folks are worried about, that historical precedent of, it's usually the older members of the community, Tuskegee and the ignoble past of some clinical research. In that case, incentives won't work either. You kind of have to have peer-to-peer teaching in the community. And then the final group, it's probably the hardest nut to crack, which are those who are worried about government interference, science, thinking there's a chip in the vaccine, et cetera. I think, maybe time will take care of that group, maybe not, but we need to be empathic and just listen to their concerns.
Wow. More questions from the public. Bob from Downey, we know lots of people have had COVID already in Los Angeles County and around the whole Southern California. Bob had COVID in January, and he says he recovered from it. He set up his appointment in April to get vaccinated, and his healthcare provider told him to wait at least 90 days after recovery. He says he didn't follow the advice, and he did end up getting a strong reaction from the first dose of the vaccine. So he's wondering if you can comment on the science of people who had COVID waiting 90 days to get their first dose. And I'm not sure exactly what the whether they're more susceptible to getting COVID while they're waiting. What's the deal with waiting 90 days?
Yeah, no, that's a great question from Bob. So I think the background of that is that the question from a medical perspective is really how long are you really protected after you get COVID naturally? So you don't want to wait too long after you get COVID because there's a fear that immunity might wane, and you don't want to be too short after getting natural COVID because maybe you'd get a stronger reaction, which it seems like happened to Bob. So I think the 90 days was chosen for a variety of reasons. First of all, we knew at that point that people who got natural COVID at least had a 90 days, window period where antibody levels were still strong. In fact, we now know that probably you can wait 9 months to 12 months, and likely your antibody levels are still going to be strong from natural infection. The second reason is actually database. So in the UK, where they delayed vaccinations because they wanted to vaccinate as many people as possible with one dose, the three-month data of people who delayed 3 months actually looks very similar to those people who who didn't wait. So I think that gave the CDC confidence to say, okay, if you had natural infection or if you got one dose and you wanted to get the second dose, a 3 month period is a safe period. So that's the reason how that came about. In terms of the reaction, it's really like, you know, if you think about it, it's a good thing. Your body is just training the Navy SEAL antibodies to sort of like fight the real enemy that's going to come again. So I think it's just being activated and thinking that the vaccine spike proteins are the real COVID. Of course, it's not. And they're just sort of building the troops. And that's the reaction that Bob has felt.
Interesting. Well, I'm getting a couple of questions from people who want to know about getting the vaccine when you have an autoimmune condition. Does the vaccine protect you? And are you at a greater danger if you take the vaccine and you have an autoimmune disease or condition?
Those are all great questions. First of all, I'll answer the first part of the question, which is, you know, are you in danger of side effects if you have an autoimmune disease from getting the vaccine? And the answer is no. There have been lots of folks with autoimmune disease, first of all, in the trials. And the reason why I always bring up the trials is not that there are also lots of people with autoimmune disease who've gotten the vaccine in real life, but the fact that they were in the trials means that they were really, really well studied and followed over time. So we know that in that very observed population, that the folks with autoimmune disease didn't seem to do any worse with their autoimmune disease. In fact, there have been anecdotes of folks with lupus and some other rheumatologic diseases who actually got better after getting the vaccine. And whether or not it's the same reason why people with long COVID actually got better after, or some of them actually, a high proportion of folks got better symptoms after getting the vaccine, because it's sort of an antigenic distraction to the immune system. That's what immunologists have said. Nobody really fully understands why. In terms of the second question, response to the vaccine by building antibodies if you have an autoimmune disease, here the answer is more complicated. It depends on what medicines you're taking because of the autoimmune disease. If you're on certain powerful biologics, and you can talk to your rheumatologist or doctor about that or provider, it may mean that you might have a lower antibody response. And we're still trying to understand that, whether or not that population may benefit from a booster soon after. I think these are all questions being studied right now.
Wow. Well, a couple comments coming in over Twitter. Sabrina says she's a little confused about the workplace guidance. She says OSHA says workers must wear masks and social distance, but do they have to social distance with customers or just each other? We're going to have more guidance from the CDC, I think, later this week, or at least from the state, right, on workplace masking?
Yes, I think June 17th, Cal OSHA is going to meet again. And it's anticipated that they will very much align the workplace with the CDC guidance from before. You know, it was very controversial in that original meeting when they wanted to be a little bit more conservative. But I think since then, they have agreed to align. So it's all expected to move forward in that way. And usually there's a 10-day window period before it gets enacted into policy. But Governor Newsom has said that if Cal OSHA says, as expected, that they will align with the CDC and state guidance, that Hewlett issue an executive order saying that it can go immediately into effect.
And we'll be standing by waiting for that. We've been chatting with AirTalk regular Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at UCSF Medical Center. Back with more in just a little bit.
Support comes from Ciclovia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclovia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclovia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.